listening to The Fitness Show, our weekly podcast on athletics.com.au. Let's say g'day to our host, Craig Harper.
And a big hello to you too, Tony Shebeki, the world's best intro man. Thank you very much. I am Craig Harper. It is The Fitness Show. Every week we're going to be here. This is episode one. I'm very excited to be involved. Coming up today, I am chatting with two distance running legends, namely Pat Carroll from Queensland and the boy Monoghetti, whom we all know and love from Ballarat. We're going to chat with Monas. We're going to talk to Pat, who's now a coach. We're going to talk about what makes somebody a champion. We're going to talk about weekend warriors. We're going to talk about elite athletes. We're going to talk about nutrition, training advice. It's going to be great. Lots coming up right here on The Fitness Show on athletics.com.au. And joining me now on The Fitness Show is a legend of Australian distance running. His name's Pat Carroll, and he joins me all the way from the thriving metropolis that is Queensland on the Dog and Bone. G'day, Pat. How are you?
Okay. Well, it's not sunny Queensland today, mate. We've got some welcome rain. I'm sitting here at home in my office, and we've got rain, which is absolutely fantastic.
You'd be running around with your undies on your head, just soaking up every drop, wouldn't you?
Undies on my head. You know something I don't know.
Mate, it's a celebratory Victorian thing. We don't talk about it much, but you might want to start something up there. Now, mate, you've hung up the boots officially from competitive running, is that right? Or are you still doing a little bit?
Yeah, I finished around about year 2000. With competitive running, so I still run, but the fire in my belly is well and truly burnt out. I've got no desire to toe the line and put in 110% anymore.
Now, you were something, I guess, in a way of an anomaly in terms of distance runners, because if my research assistant has informed me correctly, young Luke, then you took up marathon running or running as an adjunct to your karate, is that right?
Yeah, I came in through the back door, so left school, took up karate, heavily into karate. Used to run on the days I didn't train karate, yeah. So I'd do something every day. Eventually grew a little bit disillusioned with the karate scene and more into running. Running sort of suited me more. It was more of a personal thing.
Yeah.
Didn't have to drive to a class, didn't have to be there at a certain time. I could basically just run whenever I wanted. Always been a bit of a loner, so I guess I eventually found running and just suited me, suited my character.
Do we find that people who perhaps come out of martial arts and some of those sports that require a lot of discipline and focus and self-control and distance runners, do we find that a fair few of them are reasonably obsessive-compulsive types?
I think you are. I mean, you certainly have to be to achieve anything at sport on a high level.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have to look on as if there is no tomorrow. You have to be extremely selfish. And, you have to apply yourself as well as you can. With karate, I guess there's a sort of a spirit, sort of inbuilt spirit. You've got to be there to be tough. I mean, karate's not about, fighting and you know, being able to walk into a hotel or a pub or a bar and lay down 20 guys or whatever. It's all about sort of, it's more an art form.
Yeah.
It's more about, learning katas and developing a bit of an inner spirit and, you know, being good at defending yourself, but at the end of the day, I don't think anyone or many people who take up karate actually want to go and fight someone. It's more about, you know, being a better person yourself and you know, spiritually probably being a better person.
Mate, you're being way too philosophical. Because, come on, you know deep down that you want to, every now and then you want to open a can of whoop ass on someone, don't you?
Nah, mate, I'm a very passive sort of a guy, actually. I'm not into fighting at all, though, mind you. If I had to defend myself, I had to defend someone, I certainly would be in there. Not that I think I do a very good job of it, but
I reckon
I'd certainly
give them
a best shot. But I've often visualised myself running to someone's aid. So if someone was in trouble when I was walking past, I'd certainly do my best to help them out.
Now, if you were, as a coach, if you were going to identify somebody that you wanted to work with, would you rather it was someone who was more gifted emotionally, psychologically, or physically, or do we need a combination of all three?
When you say me as a coach, my role in life as a coach is I work with everyday people. I don't actually work with elite athletes, so I don't actually go looking for a certain type of individual. They actually come to me, and I don't really look for any sort of qualities in them at all. They come to me for advice, and I give them advice, and I set them a path. So I deal with people who are everyday people, weekend warriors who wish to achieve a certain goal in a 10K half marathon or marathon. So, to be honest, I don't screen them as to, you know, what sort of quality they have and, you know, maybe put them to the side and say, well, you're not going to fit the right criteria. I mean, anyone who comes to me for advice, I help them out.
We're chatting with Coach Pat Carroll from Queensland on the Fitness Show. Mate, if any, barring injuries and medical conditions, can anybody with the right training, mindset, preparation, attitude, plan, all that kind of stuff, can anyone run a marathon?
Gee, that's a bit of a tough one. And you've eliminated the things which I guess are going to prevent someone from running a marathon, injury being the main one.
Yeah.
You know, you I guess you've got two extremes. I mean, you can take, for example, my partner.
Yeah.
And she runs a marathon or has run a marathon a number of times of absolutely no training whatsoever.
Really?
And her policy or her theory is, well, if you train for a marathon, that's easy. But if you don't train for a marathon, well, there's the true test. And that's her sort of theory. But, you know, when she crosses the line, mind you, she can't walk. You know, she can't step down from the road from the footpath of the road. She can't walk.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a very good example to make. So, but at the end of the day, I guess if someone wanted to run a marathon, but then again, it takes her all day too.
Yeah.
You know, she's out there all bloody day, mate. So, not a great example to use. Can anyone run a marathon? You know, you really can't sort of put aside the barring injury thing because that is the sort of thing which is really going to stand in a lot of people's way. And you've got to also, I guess, injury and commitment are the two things. Mm. To prepare well for a marathon, regardless of what your eventual goal may be, whether it be to, you know, just to finish the 42.2K or to run under 3 hours, run under 4 hours, ideally you'd be setting yourself a challenging goal, right?
Yeah.
You've got to set yourself a challenging goal. Ideally, you'll be having a long campaign. Your campaign would be 4 to 5 to 6 months long, right? Well, you're starting off at a reasonably low level of development, and over that 5-6 month period, you're going to build your volume and intensity up so that when you're going to become a stronger individual. But you have to do that at a long, gradual increase. Okay, and the thing is, over that 5 or 6 month period, you've got to maintain a certain amount of commitment and dedication. Some people are going to lose that along the way, so they're not going to eventually run their marathon. And also along that way, your body has to handle the workload, and a lot of people are going to break down. So you've got those two sort of main things which are going to stand in your way, commitment and dedication. I mean, you may have distractions, family, work life, whatever, which is understandable, which is going to stand in the way and interrupt your campaign. And you also may pick up an injury. So you really can't ignore those two things may happen. So those are two things which may prevent someone from actually completing or running a marathon in their goal time.
We are chatting with Pat Carroll and talking distance running. Mate, what are some of the training volumes that we should be looking at? And I know it's kind of like how long is a piece of string, but let's say I'm a 40-year-old bloke. I can run 5 to 8 Ks with not too many problems, but you know, 3 days a week I might get out and do a little bit of a jog, but really nothing more. And I've decided I want to do the Melbourne Marathon in November, so I've got 5 or 6 months to prepare.
Yep.
What kind of, and I know it's how long is a piece of string, and there are lots of different variables, but ballpark, give us some kind of figures that we should be looking at in terms of training.
Well, I'd be eventually working on a diet of 4 runs a week.
Yep.
Three runs a week is probably not really going to cut it. Okay, you're probably looking at a minimum of 4 days a week. You can get by 4 days a week. Ideally, one of those runs is going to be your long training run. Your long training run for a marathon is your bread and butter session.
Yeah.
And for some people, that may be starting off at 50 minutes or an hour, you know, the first few weeks. And then you might increase, you know, 15 to 20 minutes every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, till eventually, about, let's say, 6 weeks or 8 weeks out, you're up to 3 hours. And you might do 3 hours, maybe 2 or 3 times.
Mm.
The people I deal with, regardless of what their goal is, whether their goal is to run 2.5 hours or 4 hours or 5 hours a marathon, I don't set anyone a training run more than 3 hours. My theory is anything past 3 hours, you're going to be running tired, you're going to be running slower, you're going to pick up an injury, you're not going to make a goal. What people should be aiming at is running 3 hours a number of times. Okay, rather than running 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and then throwing in a 4-hour training run and then breaking down. right? They'll be looking at knocking over 3-hour training runs a number of times in their campaign. Once again, a long campaign is the best way to go. So people wanting to prepare for the Melbourne Marathon, which I believe is about 18 weeks out, if my memory is correct, less than 18 weeks, then they should really be starting about now, okay?
Yep. Yep.
And ideally, you would be having a number of short-term goals along the way. Those short-term goals would be a couple of 10K races and a half marathon, say, 6 or 7 weeks out from your marathon.
Yep.
During your campaign, you also ideally would be picking up the pace a couple of times a week, interval-type running, and also having some time trials in your training, so 3Ks, 5Ks, you know, thrown in here and there, which are going to be your sort of fitness guide as to how you're going. And you'll be doing your 3Ks, time trials, 5K time trials, like leading into your 10K races and your half marathons. So basically, you're leapfrogging from one thing to the next. You're leapfrogging from your quick work and your training to your time trials and your training to your races, which are your short-term goals, and eventually your marathon. And with your marathon, eventual goal in your marathon can be determined by how you go in your short-term goals, that being your races, your 10Ks, and your one or two half marathons along the way.
All right, all sounds good, mate. Now, we've got not too much time, so I need to ask you a few things, and I need maybe 30 to 60 seconds on each, and all of this is relative to distance running. A little bit about nutrition.
Yeah, I steer clear of areas that I'm not trained in.
Right.
The important part about nutrition, if you've got 30 seconds, is recovery.
Yep.
Your next run is only as good as your last recovery. Your next run is only as good as your last recovery.
Yep.
And recovery mainly comes down to your diet.
Yep.
You must intake carbohydrate, protein within 30 to 45 minutes of completing your training run. How's that?
Yep, that's pretty good, mate. For a non-dietitian, that's very good. All right, your thoughts on cross training for marathon runners? Should we only run, or should we swim? Should we ride a bike? Should we bloody bungee jump? What should we do, or just run?
First priority is to get in your run.
Yep.
Okay, so if minimum of 4 runs per week. If you can do your 4 runs per week and you're jumping out of your skin and you want to do more, okay, you can go and cross train. The closest thing to running for cross training would be deep water running in a swimming pool, which you would use with the aid of a buoyancy belt.
Yep.
And the next thing would be spinning on a stationary bike. So you'd be spinning on a stationary bike at a relatively high revolution for about between 40 to 50 minutes. That would be a good cross training session.
Good answer. All right, lifting weights. Do we or don't we?
Yeah. Once again, running takes the main priority. So once you've got your running done for the week, your 4 sessions, if you do have extra energy left but you want to do something, then sure, you can do a light weight session where you'd be addressing the main sort of muscle groups that are involved in running, your hamstrings, your quads, your calves, your adductors, and maybe a bit of upper body strength also.
Yep.
But once again, concentrate on your running. Anything left over, maybe one or two weight sessions.
And I'm guessing, Pat, if you're going to be doing strength training in the gym, it's going to be more about muscular endurance rather than strict, power and speed per se.
Yeah, it's going to be a number of repetitions, sort of say 10 to 15 repetitions of lighter weights rather than, really heavy weights only a few times. So you'll be working each muscle group, about 15 reps of each muscle group at a reasonably lighter weight.
Mate, tell me a little bit about being a coach versus being an athlete. What would you rather be? If you could only be one, I'm sure it'd be an athlete, but you've hung up the boots. But how is the coaching thing?
Mate, life's a journey, not a destination,
That's
and I'm
true.
Pretty happy where I am at my lot in life at the moment. I enjoyed my time as an elite athlete, but to be honest, it's something that can't go on forever and a day.
Yeah.
Age is something that we as human beings cannot deny, and it certainly sits in eventually, and it's sitting with me. That's the reason why I started slowing down, basically just because I was getting old, mate. So once I finished that, that's fine. That's what I did with that part of my life. And now I'm totally enjoying what I'm doing with this part of my life.
And tell us about life as a coach. Have you got any great, and I don't mean super-duper world record time performances, but any great stories that have come out of working with individuals?
Oh, numerous great stories. Mate, if you want to go to my website, patcarlonline.com, and I've actually got a testimonial page, and I don't know how many testimonials I've got there, but take your tissues, mate, and just read the testimonials on my page, and you'll get a pretty good insight as to the type of change I make to people's lives with regards to running. And any particular case, mate, there's just so many. I mean, you know, helping people break 3 hours, you know, for the first time for the marathon. A number of times over the last few years I've run as the 3-hour pacer at the Gold Coast Airport Marathon.
Yeah.
And it's been a real joy to be able to coach an individual online to break 3 hours and then to actually run beside that person in the actual event. And I've done that a number of times over the Gold Coast over the last few years, and I guess that's an absolute treat. And to know that I'm making a difference to these people's lives is priceless, mate.
Sure is. Well, mate, we've got to leave it there, but we appreciate your time, your effort, your energy, your insight, your wisdom, your experience. Now, give that website a plug.
Having my good looks.
Mate, I've got a picture of you here in front of me, and you're wearing a pair of shorts, which you look like you're in some kind of weird time warp from the 80s, but you're in good nick. And knowing that you're a black belt in karate, I'm only being cheeky because you're in another state. Mate, how do people contact you if they want to chat to you online?
Yeah, like you just think if people are driving the car or whatever, just Google Pat Carroll, or they can find me on my website, patcarrollonline.com. They go to patcarrollonline.com, patcarrolloonline.com. They'll find me if they need help preparing for any event, whether it be Melbourne Marathon, run to the G, Gold Coast, which is only a few weeks away. You name it, I can help you out. I can help you prepare for the event that you're training for.
You're the guy, and as a bloke who holds about 45,000 records, you would be the guy that I would go to. Pat Carroll, you've been a champion. Thanks for your time on The Fitness Show.
Pleasure, Craig.
There he was, Pat Carroll. What a great man. And coming up very soon, we're going to be chatting with another great man, Steve Monaghetti, a good friend of mine, Moners. He's built like a coat hanger with shoes, but we're going to chat with him as well. We're going to have a lot of fun right here on The Fitness Show. And joining me now is one of the legends, in fact, not one of the legends, he is indeed the legend of Australian distance running. His name's Steve Monaghetti. Morning, buddy, how are you?
Okay, Craig, good. How are you, mate?
Mate, I'm doing the very best I can here on episode one of The Fitness Show for athletics.com.au. We're very excited, and I'm sure you would be incredibly excited too, being involved. How's life up in the thriving metropolis of Ballarat?
Going well, yes. We had some cooler weather. I've been travelling around a bit, so I've been able to escape it briefly, but it's always nice to get back and see some water in Lake Wendouree. It'd
be a top of about 9 degrees down there today, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think we're up to about, I think it's 11, so yeah. Right on the mark.
Really? Bloody hell. You'd have your zinc cream and your hat on, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's it. I seriously was in Leonora on the weekend in WA, and I ran without my singlet on, so it was 20 degrees and balmy over there, and I got home, and I felt it a bit. I had to have the gloves and beanie on for a couple of days when I got home.
You've got to be careful with that fair skin of yours, mate, being up running around with your shirt off. You know how I worry.
That's right, yes.
Now, mate, tell us about the stocks of Australian distance running. How are we looking? Have we got any young guns coming through? Is there somebody that we should be watching out, us spectators, watching out for?
Oh, well, I think certainly over there we had Colas Birmingham win the prestigious Golden Gift over there, the mile event that they have, and he covered Mark Tucker and Yusuf Abdi, so I think people would probably be looking at his name. And I mean, I don't want to put pressure on Paul Collis, but he's been seen to be the heir apparent to Craig Mottram, so and he's just heading off to Europe. He will have arrived there I think yesterday, and he'd be looking to run some European races to hopefully get a qualifying out to run the 5K or the 1500 at the World Championships in Osaka. So he's going pretty well.
He's no Steve Monaghetti, but he might get there. Is that one of the things that you need to be careful of, mate, as a coach and as a mentor to these young guys, that you don't put too much pressure on them and that the weight of expectation from the public and from the punters doesn't actually handicap them?
Oh, no doubt about that. One of the little anecdotes or one of the little sayings I have is that you don't want to have your reputation ahead of your ability, because I think that puts undue pressure on you. There's reasons why you can't run in particular events or do particular training, because you're then feeling like you've got to appease this person or that person, or you're doing this and doing that. So I always like to think, if anything, it's better to be the other way around. If your running's ahead of your media profile or your public image, then that's better, because you know you're doing it. You're doing what you love and you're doing it well, and that will catch up, just a matter of getting a few sort of more years or months of training under your belt. So I certainly tell my athletes and mentor any athletes I mentor that exact story.
So we're never going to see any of the distance boys and girls in your stable come out with the kind of the boxing parlance, mate, where they're talking themselves up and they're going to wipe their opponents and all that kind of stuff.
No chance. Never going to happen.
I don't know. What do they do that for? I don't know about the psychology. I reckon if I was a boxer, and far be it from me to ever be a boxer, but...
or me.
Yeah. I reckon I'd talk myself. I think I'd probably go, you know what, look, I'll do the very best I can. I'm not that talented, but I'll give it a red hot go. Maybe it's all about marketing, Moniz.
I think so. I think it's all the... they've got to pump their figures up beforehand. I think... No disrespect to boxers, but I think they're often one fight away from oblivion. So I think they probably need to raise their profile, push the fight to its highest level, because if it doesn't go their way, it's a bit... You know, in boxing, I reckon you win or you lose.
Yeah.
In distance running... You know, you don't finish first, but you still have little goals and personal challenges that you can achieve, and you can, you know, you're close to winning. So next time you'll get out, you know, a bit more training, you will win. So I think there's a slight difference in the way our sports operate.
So what you're telling me, mate, is that Anthony Mundine probably never going to be a great distance runner.
No, I certainly think he's a sprinter, isn't he? He's got. I tell you, gee, wouldn't you love to be? Running in a 100-metre race with him and beating him. Gee, that would give you a lot of glee.
He's got some fair genetics on him, though. He's reasonably talented. If you're talking about genetics, is there an ideal prototype for the marathon or the half-marathon body, or is it vary greatly?
I'd certainly become, even in my time, you know, I was one of the smaller, slighter runners, whereas now I would be, you know, I'm 175 centimetres, so about sort of, just under 5'9",
yeah.
And 60 kilograms,
yeah.
And I would be one of the taller and heavier marathon runners in this generation.
Wow.
It's just we've really trimmed down, and it used to be, you know, all shapes and sizes, but now it's very much a thin, what do we call it? I better get it right. Is it
probably an
ectomorphic frame?
Yeah, mate, don't get all too tricky and scientific on us. You'll confuse us all. Yeah, I think you'd be an ectomorph, and I'd be very much a mesoendomorph, which means kind of big and kind of fat, bit of muscle and a bit of fat.
Don't want to be carrying that. Obviously, for a distance runner to carry any extra weight or any fat, we're just carrying it for no efficient reason. So
yeah.
We tend to be slight and small in frame and quite efficient across the ground. So obviously, aerobically, or musculatory, we're very slow twitch fighters.
Yeah. What would your average, and I know this is a very general question, but what would your typical elite male marathon runner weigh, give or take a few kilos?
I reckon it would be, it'd be very close to my weight, 60 kilograms.
Wow, my lunch weighs more than that, Moniz.
Yeah, that's right.
I reckon
we eat more for lunch than you do, believe it
or
not. That's just
do.
The way it is when you're running the amounts we do.
See, I reckon if you and I had a little bit of a competition and I was towing a caravan and so were you and it was uphill into the wind in soft sand, I reckon I'd have you.
I think you might have me. I'd be in the caravan sleeping. That'd be my closest.
And I'd be
the caravan would be carrying me.
Now, the last decade or so has seen you move from being strictly an athlete to an athlete and a coach. How's the transition been? What do you like about being a coach and what don't you like?
I've been very fortunate because I've been able to stay heavily involved in the sport. The coaching aspect can be difficult because what seemed quite simple and obvious to me can often be difficult to translate into other people. So I found it a bit frustrating at times that I'd say something quite basic and, you know, I'll get their diary 2 months later and go, what's all this in here?
Yeah.
They go, that's what you told me to do. And I said, no, that's nothing like what that's hieroglyphics compared to what I'd written down.
Yeah.
So the message is often complicated and I find that quite difficult. So I think I'm a fairly good communicator, but even something in the way I deliver it gets lost in translation. So that can be frustrating as a coach. And, you know, I think there was a lot of things that I took for granted in my own running that now I'm learning, you know, that I was probably very fortunate. And there's a number of probably 20 factors that you have to put together in the makeup of an athlete to get them to perform at their best.
We're chatting with Steve Monaghetti, sorry mate, on the fitness show. One of the really interesting things for me is that sometimes we see athletes, Moniz, who come out of their sport and they've been gifted and they're champions and they're genetic freaks and all of that. But that that ability and that skill that they had to perform in their own sport doesn't necessarily translate to them being good teachers, motivators, communicators or coaches, does it?
No, not at all. And sometimes I think it's quite the other way around, to be honest. And I think, like I say, sometimes being successful, you don't often understand why you're successful.
Yeah.
And I think you really have to work hard as a coach to learn a different trade. It's not a natural transition. It's very much a learning experience. And, you know, most coaches aren't successful straight away. They need to develop a technique and just learn from historical reasons and patterns that suit their own personality to make them a good coach.
And I guess on the other side as well, we sometimes see people who have been not necessarily amazing athletes themselves, perhaps solid athletes, but someone like a Neil Craig, who never played AFL football, played SANFL football at a reasonable level, of course, and is an exercise scientist with a master's degree, but not revered as a brilliant footballer, but widely regarded as a very good coach, teacher and communicator.
Yes, and but you would say he probably got the best out of his ability.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's just as important because it allows you to realise what maximises your performance, and I think that's been really important. And obviously, as well as physically playing it, at the same time, he was really keen on learning about the science of it, and he's been able to combine those two when he's made the transition into coaching very well.
Speaking about getting the best out of themselves, is that one of the frustrations for you is when you recognise immense talent in an athlete, whether or not it's a runner, a distance runner, a sprinter or another kind of athlete, but when you see amazing ability and talent and potential in someone but they don't see it in themselves?
I find it slightly the other way around, to be honest, because I often find that if they are amazingly talented and got enormous ability, they often take it for granted. And I love getting the person who's not seen to be that talented and maybe gets beaten by that person all the time, and then taking them under my wing and getting them to develop to the level where they start beating the person who seemed to be more talented. So I like the person on sort of just the rung underneath, because I think they've got a good work ethic and they haven't had it sort of all that easy. They've had to work a bit harder for their their success and with their ability. So I like taking that person on. Sometimes you're on a hiding to nothing. If you take a very talented person, then you're really only achieving what people would expect you to.
Yeah, I guess so. And I guess also a huge part of the success of any athlete is not just the physiological gifts, but also the emotional and the psychological part of the process and the application. And if you've got the most talented athlete with the worst attitude, you're going to go nowhere.
Exactly. You're going to have more trouble. Seriously, they'd be more trouble than they're worth. And that's no disrespect to talented athletes, but you know, I think there's talent physically, and then there's a lot of other components that make up turning that talent into or realising that talent. And I think we often underestimate those other characteristics.
Okay, mate, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes. I know you've got to go and pick up one of your kids, so thanks for chatting with us, talking with Steve Monoghetti on The Fitness Show. A few nuts and bolts questions, mate. Let's say I'm a 40-year-old bloke. I've never run a marathon in my life. I've decided I want to do a marathon. I'm 85 Ks. My fitness is 5 out of 10. I'm not going to die of a heart attack anytime soon, but I really am coming from a zero training base.
Yep.
How long will it take me to get to be able to do a 3.5 or a 4-hour marathon without killing myself and pulling up sore for 2 months?
Yeah, what I normally say, and no one ever listens, but I normally say, hey, forget about the marathon, just think about the half marathon.
Right.
And you've probably got 6 months, you can train up for the half marathon. I kind of think of the half marathon as a normal person's marathon.
Yeah.
And then I say, well, once you've run the half marathon, come back and talk to me then. So, and I might even see you at the finish line. And just as you cross the finish line, I'll just mention that, hey, how would you like to just turn around and do that again? And that might just make you think, ooh, maybe that's a long way to go. I might just put that marathon training on the back burner for a little while. So I use that approach. But what often happens is people will accelerate at a different rate. They get a couple of months out. They're going well. They've done a 32K run. And they say, oh, look, I've got that half covered. I'm going to actually go the full distance. And they normally get to sort of about 34, 35K and maybe need to have a walk or a bit of a shuffle when they hit the wall. But you know, they end up getting there in, like you say, probably just over 4 hours. At the end of the day, they've run a marathon, and that's a good success result for them, really.
It's a great achievement for the average punter. I've run a couple of half marathons. In fact, I've run 3 half marathons with some of my clients, and each time sitting somewhere around 90 Ks. And I've got to tell you, running a half marathon, running weighing 90 Ks, not a great thing.
No, no, and that's the problem. Once you run out of glycogen or you're getting tired, that weight's really going to compound, slowing down.
Yeah, especially when you're being passed by, 11-year-olds, mate. It's not good for the self-esteem or the people go, isn't that Craig Harper, the exercise science bloke? Isn't that being passed by the 11-year-old with red hair there?
That's when you say you're just part of an important study.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just doing some research. Well, mate, thank you very much for chatting with us. We know you've got to take off, but hopefully we'll talk again, and we appreciate your time, your input, your thoughts and your energy. Steve Monaghetti.
No worries. Good to chat to you. Thanks, Craig.
Thanks, Monaz. See you, mate. Steve Monaghetti on The Fitness Show, athletics.com.au. What a great man he is. We're going to chat with him and lots of people like him over the coming weeks right here on The Fitness Show. There you have it. One show down and 14,000 to go. My thanks to Pat Carroll, Steve Monaghetti for coming on The Fitness Show. It's been enlightening and captivating. Every single week from now on, we're going to have some great guests, motivators, gurus, experts, coaches, athletes, and people who are going to help us perform in our chosen sport. I'll see you next time. Well, I probably won't see you, but I'll talk to you next time on The Fitness Show. I'm Craig Harper. Chat soon.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Fitness Show, another podcast here on athletics.com.au. Join Craig Harper and the team again next week. Till then, keep fit.